the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to the December 16th, 2010 radio podcast of Education Now. I am your host, Athena Melville. Tonight we feature an interview with Kendra Blackett Dibinga from Save the Children. Kendra joined me to highlight a cross-sectorial and multi-agency initiative funded by the Hilton Foundation in collaboration with CARE that looks at developing an essential package for early childhood education in the context of HIV and AIDS. This package is meant to empower caregivers who are not necessarily the biological mothers to support them in developing needs of young children in their care. They are about to pilot this package in the field, looking specifically at issues around caregiver needs, like grandparents or youth-headed households, and linking them to services. Their premise is that if they can address the needs within the caregiving environment, that they would be able to provide the right conditions for proper growth and development. So let's get to the interview now, and remember that you can always send comments or questions to me at hermes@pacific.net, or please link to us and comment at our Facebook page. There are three parts to Education Now's podcast tonight. Two reports about from Save the Children, one with Kendra on HIV and AIDS, one report that I do on their heart project, and one from Christopher Melville on cooperative games in the classroom. So looking forward to sharing all three parts with you this evening. And hello, Kendra Blackett Dibinga, and welcome to the radio airwaves of Education Now. I am so delighted that you're going to be speaking with us today representing Save the Children, which is probably one of the most important organizations, in my opinion, that we have going in this world for children and their families. And how are you today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I know you're in D.C., which is, there's a three-hour difference because I'm here on the Pacific Coast. So while it's 11 o'clock in the morning your time, it's 8 o'clock in the morning here. And it's just a beautiful day here in California. How is it there in D.C.?
Well, we got some snow on our cars this morning, but other than that, it's nice. It's cool. It's colder. You tell that winter is coming.
Yeah. Well, winter is coming. I hear that from a lot of people who are skiing, and you know they tell me. But it hasn't been too bad, although I hear there's so much rain further north. Than I am, and people are saying, the 50-year flood comes every 10 years now, and we sort of laugh a little about that. Well, there's a special project that you've been involved with Save the Children, that you were going to tell us about today that impact the children of HIV and AIDS.
Yes. And yes. Go ahead.
No, I was just waiting for you.
Okay, great. Yes, I wanted to let you know about a new and exciting project that we've actually been working on with another organization called CARE, based in Atlanta. We receive funding from the Conrad Hilton Foundation to develop what is termed an essential package for HIV and AIDS, but looking really at the impact of HIV on young children and their caregivers. So we've been developing this essential package over the last year and a half or so, and we're about to start rolling it out in the field to really try and understand how we can better support caregivers who may or may not be the biological mother of that particular child, but who may be a grandparent, who may be an older sibling, and how we can better support them to support the developmental needs of young children under their care. And so we're really excited about this because, you know, many people in the ECD world tend to really concentrate on that biological mother, but we understand in the context of HIV and AIDS, you know, we're dealing with different household setups that would require some quite different interventions.
Yes, I can see that it would require some quite different interventions because you never know. And I know in speaking to other people from Save the Children with other projects, oftentimes it's the grandparents or other family members that get involved in the implementation of a program. And I think it's wonderful that, you know, you reach out to the entire family and the community. What are some of the ideas that you have for this initiative? And also, could you mention again the CARE organization that you're working with? I missed it. I want our listeners to have an opportunity to hear it again.
Okay. Well, the other organization is called CARE, C-A-R-E, and they're based in Atlanta. And so both organizations received funding to develop this a package that would really be broadly owned by a multitude of organizations that are working with vulnerable children impacted by HIV and AIDS. So some of our ideas so far, like we went through an extensive literature review, which really showed us that, you know, the disease itself is unique in a number of ways. It doesn't only impact those children who are infected, because we know that children who are infected by HIV and AIDS will experience developmental delays, some more severe than others, depending on, you know, the way that the virus interacts with their own system. But at the same time, we also understand that children who may not be infected per se, but may be affected, meaning that they may be living in a household where there is an infected caregiver, or where they have lost, siblings, family members, caregivers due to the virus itself. They're affected but may not be infected. But the literature is also showing that they would experience developmental delay. So our idea is to try and understand better, you know, what is the caregiving environment that those children are living in, and how can we boost that caregiving environment so that we can really support the caregiver, no matter who that person is, to really understand what are those needs of young children over, you know, and we're really looking at children zero between the, you know, from conception to 8 years old, right after they enter preschool. So we're really trying to see, you know, how can those caregivers be better supported? You know, what are they actually able to do? So, for example, if we were in a household where there is a grandmother, for example, who is taking care of a young child, that grandmother may not be able to engage, per se, in income-generating activities, like an economic activity that would be able to bring money to that household. But for sure, the grandmother can provide love. And so we're really trying to look at, you know, what are these caregivers best able to provide in their context, and where would they need further support? So, you know, we're trying to really avoid a type of one-size-fits-all solution where, you know, everybody would engage in an economic activity, or everybody would just get parenting education, or everybody, you know, would get one particular thing, when in fact their needs would be very different. So that's the kind of thing that we're looking at. Similarly, with the case of youth-headed households where, maybe an older sibling, you know, between the ages of 14 and 18, I'm really responsible for taking care of younger children. You know, what is the best package for them? Are they going to be taken out of school to engage in an economic activity, for example? Or, you know, how can we support their educational needs so that they can also have a future and not only be, you know, they're seen as just a caregiver for younger children. So there's a multitude. It's very ambitious, this initiative, because of the disease itself and its widespread impact on a number of caregiving aspects within the household. And so we're really trying to unpack that a little bit so that programs can really define, you know, what it is that would be needed depending on who the caregiver is in the particular context.
So another, so it's a collaborative. There are many organizations involved. It's a collaborative, and then you're saying you're recognizing that love is really essential, and not just something that might be there. Or hello,
I'm sorry. Can you still hear me?
I can hear you, but there's also a phone ringing in the background or something.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was trying to shut it off, but it didn't go off. So
that's
I apologize
okay.
for that.
That's all right. Okay. We give ourselves space to be human here. So, I'm glad we got it though. So you're saying it's a collaborative. There are several organizations involved, and you're looking at everything individually. You've individualizing the program so that it's not a one size fits all. Where in some situation it might be a grandparent that's the primary caregiver. In another situation, it might be a sibling. Yeah, in the situation where it's a sibling, how can you be sure that that child's needs for education, et cetera, socialization, are not ignored while they're being the primary caregiver for another child that has HIV or AIDS?
Exactly.
So you're really trying to individualize, and you're doing a collaborative. Have I got that all right?
Yes, you've got it perfectly. And though it was only CARE and Save the Children that received the grant, other organizations have been very, very involved in the development of the package. And there have been a number of times where we've engaged the NGO community, both in the U.S. and in Africa. And we're primarily focusing on Africa because of the higher prevalence there. But we've been engaged a number of organizations and a number of different program managers from numerous country contexts to really inform the development of the package. And so it's really been a wide-ranging effort from a number of agencies.
Yes, it sounds really good. Are there some other ideas that you have? For instance, if you know that the person with AIDS and HIV has the love and the that they need and the time, but they don't have food or adequate shelter, are those some things that could be that will be dealt with, will be addressed, or is
right? Exactly. We would hope to address those through, you know, the community mechanisms that exist. Right now, communities are really engaged in providing the majority of care and support for households that are impacted or households that are vulnerable. And we would hope to continue that. But at the same time, we're trying to also understand, you know, where are governments, needed to come in and provide particular services. Communities can definitely provide some things, but then there are government services that may or may not be in place, which would also be very important to really helping those children reach their developmental potential. So in some areas, there may not be early childhood opportunities, for example, for young children to socialize and to, you know, do that early learning that is
yes.
necessary for them to enter successfully into preschool. And so we're also hoping to work on that as well. And I want to say that this is really being done in a broader context of what is really been highlighted over the last couple of years in terms of quality improvement. We recognized in the beginning when the president when President Bush launched the President's Emergency Plan for HIV and AIDS, that many of the programs really tended to focus on children that were older or who were already in school because they were, in a sense, easier to reach. But it didn't really go out to those kids who were not yet in school. And so, you know, the very, very young, for example, or those who are very vulnerable and didn't have the resources to access school. And so we, you know, this time we're saying, well, how do we really incorporate what we're terming an ages and stages approach that really helps us to improve the quality of our programs so that if we are dealing with a young child, let's say an infant, their needs are going to be very different than an adolescent. And so how do we help programs really tailor their approaches to reach the developmental needs of children and to reach the very specific and assessed needs of households and caregivers?
That's wonderful. That's wonderful, and I think it's so important that you're going to be looking at the youngest, you know, the very young, because that is so important, that stage of life. It couldn't be more important than that.
That's
you
right.
That you reach them at that age. And so I think it's wonderful that it's happening. I think it's also so wonderful that it's individualized. Instead of saying,
yeah,
we're going to do this, now let's go in here and do this, you know. You're going to look at
right.
a particular situation and address that particular situation, correct?
Exactly. Because we understand that those needs are very different, and those children need very different things, and as well as the caregivers. One other innovation for this project is really we are trying to understand the caregiver itself. You know, there are, you know, the research is showing that caregiver mental health is also a critical issue in terms of being able to support the growing needs of children. And if we are not able to address that, like, for example, one thing we've heard and we are seeing from the literature is that grandparents, or grandmothers, I should be specific, if they're linked to a social network, then they can actually overcome a lot of the, you know, stress and anxiety about caring for children, you know, once they're well past their prime, you know. And so our goal would be to say, well, are these services available in the community? And if not, how can we help get them there if we know that that would help to mitigate the impact on that grandparent who's caring for a young child? And so we are really trying to tailor these programs based on some assessed needs as well as grounding it in the literature. The literature is very compelling, and so we are trying to ground our responses in the literature.
That's great. That's just so appropriate. It seems so appropriate to me. This is exciting news, and I just wish you every success. When will this really get off the ground?
We're actually going out to Mozambique in January, and starting in mid-January, we will start with the training, and then over the course of the period, we're going to be collecting some data to really try and assess the impact of this essential package, and really try to understand under which conditions, you know, are the particular actions involved doable, and does it matter who the caregiver is. So we'll be gathering that data over the next 6 to 8 months. And so by August, we will have something more to share, by which time we'll be finalizing the package.
Oh, well, I hope I get to hear from you in August. It would be...
For sure.
I would love to get feedback on how this all goes. And it sounds like you're excited about it. And I think it just sounds really exciting and wonderful. And I just wish you all the success. How long have you been with Save the Children, Kendra?
About 5 years.
That's great. So you've
yeah.
It's not like you're a novice.
No. No, this is really an exciting time for us. We would like to consider ourselves as really advancing the state of the art, and early childhood development is a key area of focus for Save the Children. And so by us working with across the HIV/AIDS and education department, I think we're going to put together something really, really spectacular that will be of use for program managers in the field. So we will definitely keep you updated on the progress.
Oh, thank you so very much. I do appreciate that. I I know I feel, and so many others, that we really haven't given HIV and AIDS the attention or the funding that it deserves. And so it's really great to hear that something positive is happening in that area.
Yes.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we say our goodbyes?
No, I think I've shared everything. As I said, we will definitely keep you updated as the progress. We will have continuous updates anyway because we'll be having somebody based in Mozambique. I should add that the other country context where we are looking at this would be Malawi and Zambia. And so we'll have at least three country contexts that would help us really, and which are all high prevalent.
So Mozambique, Malawi, and Zambia.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So they will all be providing us really important information as we finalize the final package.
Right. And so let me see if I can recap this. This is a collaborative between Save the Children and CARE and many other organizations that are involved through CARE with you, and it's an initiative to reach the very youngest, early childhood, to reach the very youngest and their caregivers, and it's going to be an individualized approach to the needs of HIV and AIDS children, and that you're starting in January in Mozambique, in Zambia, and Malawi. And that you will probably have an update for us in August.
That's right. That's
do I
right.
have it? Did I get it?
Yes,
right?
You do. Yes, you do. Well, yes, and yes, you do. You have it right. And this is made possible by the generous contribution of the Conrad Hilton Foundation. I would like to emphasize that their generous support has really helped us to put this together.
The Conrad Hilton
Foundation.
Foundation, the Conrad Hilton Foundation. All right. Thank you for that. Well, I appreciate so much for taking your time this morning to talk with me about this really important package that that Save the Children is preparing for HIV and AIDS in the context of HIV and AIDS and their efforts to address children in the early years so that they can be prepared for school entry and their caregivers to be there for them, and especially that it's going to be an individualized approach. It sounds really great. Thank you so much for taking your time this morning, Kendra.
Thank you so much for having me. We'll talk soon, hopefully.
Great. Bye-bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much to Kendra for joining me to bring news of this pilot project from Save the Children. Contact information for Kendra Blackett Dibinga is K Blackett, KBLACKETT, at savechildren.org. That's all one word, savechildren.org. And now I want to tell you about another really wonderful program through Save the Children called Healing and Education Through Art. Save the Children Heart Program uses the arts to promote children's development and well-being by providing them with a creative means of expression. The program is targeted to children living in countries and communities affected by conflict, violence, HIV and AIDS, and extreme poverty. Children, some so young they don't yet have the language skills, learn how to use the arts to give voice to their emotions about difficult events in their everyday lives. And I just can't help thinking about how much Carl Jung would love knowing that this program, Healing and Education Through Art, was happening. This is critical to helping children cope and putting them on a path to reach their full potential in life. by working with local partners, Save the Children seeks to integrate HEART into its emergency response work, as well as its education and early childhood development programs, so that the programs can continue for years to come. Now, the program was piloted in Mozambique, in the West Bank, and in El Salvador. Through funding from the Charles Engelhard Foundation, HEART was piloted in 2006 in Mozambique and the West Bank. HEART programming was launched in El Salvador in 2008. In Mozambique, the art activities took place in the community-based preschools called Ecolinas. In rural Mozambique, where HIV and AIDS has taken a huge toll on children and their families, Save the Children partnered with graduates of the School of Visual Arts in Maputo, an associate of MAWANA, an early childhood development resource organization. Teachers from 8 Ecolinas were trained to promote children's development in an interactive way through the use of creative teaching and learning materials. The program uses locally available resources like charcoal, sisal, and color needs to make paint, paintbrushes, and other art materials. In early 2010, applying lessons learned from the start of the project and the funding from the ELMA Foundation, and the Save the Children expanded the use of innovating art activities by training more than 140 teachers from 30 additional Ecolinas. This spring, these Ecolinas held art days for their communities, which gave children and their teachers the opportunity to share their art activities with community members, parents, and grandparents. The program's latest efforts include designing storybooks based on local stories. In the West Bank, psychologists and social workers and school counselors from several local organizations were trained by Save the Children to carry out visual art activities for children in communities affected by conflict. The program engages mothers, too, so that children can continue their art activities at home with their family. And in El Salvador, Save the Children partnered with a local organization to design visual art activities for children and youth in communities affected by gang violence and extreme poverty. The program combines instruction on art with discussion of topics that help them cope, allowing children to produce art while reflecting on their lives and communities. The HEART Endowment established programs to expand to Haiti, Malawi, and Nepal. So the program is expanding and ongoing, and it's so very exciting. It's so thrilling to me because I feel that expression, and I know that that expression is a way to cope with so much pain in everyone's life. And I'm just so delighted that this information and this kind of process is reaching children who need it the most. And you can get more information on this project by going to 3wsavethechildren.org and looking for Education Through Art, HEART, H-E-A-R-T. I really enjoyed sharing news from Save the Children with all of you tonight. And now I'm going to share a recording of a dialogue I had with Montessori teacher and board member Christopher Melville on his experiences using cooperative games to problem solve in his kindergarten through second grade classroom. This was an idea Christopher had after he had heard an RSA animate video with Sir Ken Robinson on divergent thinking. I hope that you will enjoy it. I certainly am enjoying getting to share it with you tonight.
So this cool thing happened in my classroom yesterday, and I wanted to show you some of these videos of this thing I've been doing. So I'll preface what happened yesterday with this other thing. I found this game. I don't know if you remember those games that we used to have at the school, Princess. And
Oh, yes.
So they're cooperative games, and they were a big inspiration for me in how to create cooperative games, building my own cooperative games and the benefit of cooperative games, and, you know, thinking around the idea of a game where everybody could be trying to win, and yet, you know, it was still a challenge, and you could work cooperatively towards a goal, and it didn't have to be I'm against you and I'm going to win and beat you at this game. It was more of a, can we all use our combined skill to succeed at some sort of challenge. So anyway, I found one of these games when I was down in Sebastopol at Earthchild, and they had a bunch of them. And this one was like the least attractive to me. Like it was like, I knew it was not going to have a lot of like cool pieces. And as far as, you know, that sort of, but the concept was the most interesting. It's called Together, and I have some video footage of it that I can show you. I also posted some of it on YouTube for my parents to see. But the concept behind the game was really interesting, so I got it and checked it out. And basically what it is a series of little cards, you know, sort of hard cardstock, though, for like, so that little younger kids can really grip them. It's not like little papery kind of cards, but like, you know, a series of little cardboardy kind of pictures. And each of the pictures represents a major problem in the world. Like, you know, and a picture of people fighting, like war, you know, and it says fighting, you know, on there too, but it has a picture of it, or it says famine, and it has a picture of somebody, you know, starving, and just says famine on it, you know, or it says prejudice, and has a picture of, you know, two people who maybe look differently, you know, ignoring each other, right, and then says prejudice. So these are all major problems it has from all over the world, just that are consistent to, you know, every culture around the world. Some of them, of course, more prevalent in other places than you know, certain places. But they're all problems that people have. And then it also has a whole collection of resources. Like it has food. It has water. It has on a card, picture of water. You know, it has a picture of land, of housing, of technology, education, and anyway, all these concepts. So, and some of them are very concrete, you know, like food or housing. And then some of them are more abstract, like kindness is one of them, you know. So there's sort of these resources that you might have that are not, some of them tangible and some of them intangible. And then what the game is really, it's really a sort of a formalized game. I made it a little bit more flexible for my class, but you're supposed to divide the class into groups, you know, randomly, and then they each represent a little city or a tribe or a country, whatever they want to represent. And then you just randomly distribute to them resources and problems. And then they have to reach consensus within their little city of how they're going to solve the problems they have. So if they have famine, and then they have, like, housing and, you know, land and kindness, right? Those are the only resources they have, but they are having a famine. Then they have to discuss within the group how they can resolve this famine.
Are you saying famine or salmon?
Oh, famine, sorry, not salmon.
Wait a minute, with an F.
With an F, like a famine, okay, where there's no food, yeah. Right? So what's part of the game that's interesting is there's creativity, because the kids have to come up with interesting ways to solve things. Like some of my kids have solved famine with land because they say, well, we're going to farm it. If we have land, then we'll grow food. And we'll, you know, if we just had more land, we could do this. And they're very creative. Or they'll say, you know, we have kindness, so, you know, we're going to try to solve our famine by, you know, using our kindness to help people, and then maybe they'll give us food. And, you know, what they're supposed to try to resolve all the problems that they currently have, and they have to reach a consensus within the group that would solve that. So you do have to kind of have, you know, somebody there kind of overseeing, or somebody with a certain knowledge of the thing, so that you can't be, they're not just going like, oh yeah, famine, I'll solve that with housing. Oh yeah, I'll, you know, like they're not really thinking about how that would resolve.
Right.
So, you know, as a teacher, you're kind of overseeing that and deciding, well, does that make sense or doesn't that make sense? I've made the game a little bit more broad where they can just take the pieces out and give themselves a collection and then even do it on an individual basis. They don't necessarily need a whole village to do it, you know, so it's not quite as useful because reaching consensus is important. But at least they're still dealing with how they resolve problems. So what was really cool was my kids have been doing this game, and they've been playing it, and I have video footage of them solving some of the most amazing problems that face the country in the most interesting and unique ways with a great deal of insight. I was asking Ruby, the same girl whose parents are involved, she had said she solved pollution. And I said, how did you solve pollution? Because that's one of the problems on there, pollution.
Right. Uh-huh.
And she said she solved it with law.
Huh.
And I said, well, how did you solve pollution with law? And she said, well, if there are laws that are saying that you should not be polluting, then you need to follow those laws. And if you can't, then you should probably feel bad about yourself. And I thought, great insight here. There are some of the other solutions that people came up with for things were very creative and interesting. One of the problems that's presented in the game is called deception. And it has a picture of a man, talking about peace, but he's thinking about war. Mm-hmm. And there's a picture of a woman who's talking about this wonderful thing, wonderful product, which is all looks very sunny and nice, but she's thinking about that it's really poison. And she knows it's really poison, but, she's selling it like it's something great, And I had a lot of trouble describing to kids what this problem really was, what deception meant, and how it was a big problem and how to resolve it. And so one of the things they were trying to, they had said that they could resolve Taya had said she could resolve deception with kindness and technology. And so I said, well, explain that. How can you do that, And she said, well, first of all, people would need to be kind, because if you're being kind to them, then maybe they'll learn to be kind too, and they won't want to be deceiving people. But also, you need the technology, because then you could look up, things online to find out what's really going on and what's really happening, and if, what the real stuff really is about, and learn about it so that you can't be deceived. And, I'm just like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. At the same time, I'm going, yeah, this is exactly what's going on in the world right now. It's the issues that we're talking about of people trying to solve these problems and needing these kinds of resources. And the insight the kids had to why you would need the internet for certain solutions, why technology was a huge advantage given many, many situations. Situations like crime, how they would resolve crime, like with housing and food, because they said, I think these people who are committing this crime, the crime's a problem, and I think that we could solve it if we had housing, because I think that they don't have any place to live, and that's why they're causing this crime, and I don't think they have anything to eat, and so if they had food, then we could solve crime. They didn't go to law as the way to resolve crime, right?
Right.
There was very much a sense of, why are these people committing this crime? Not, well, they're committing crime, so we will try to stop them. Right.
Right.
So yesterday...
So intuitively, they're into rehabilitating.
Yes, absolutely.
They're not into punishment.
And when you watch, what's really cool watching them play the game is the game is actually designed for like 8 to 12-year-olds. And what's really interesting is watching them play it, as 5 to 7-year-olds.
Now, it's designed for what age group?
8 to 12.
And you're playing it with
5 to 7 year olds.
And the name of the game is?
Is called Together.
Okay.
And it's from, I think, 1972.
And it's a cooperative game.
Cooperative game, yeah. So what's interesting watching them play is that they have this intuition about how to solve problems that you wouldn't expect, and some of them make incredible amounts of sense that when you think about them the way they're thinking about them. And what inspired me to try this was the RSA video you showed me over Thanksgiving about divergent thinking. And I started to think about, if kids really are 98% geniuses at divergent thinking, kindergartners are, then what would happen if you presented them with some of the biggest problems that are facing, humanity, and ask them to, think of all the possible solutions, right? Well, what you have is somebody who's a genius at that and can come up with any solution because they just have so much divergent thinking. And they come up with some of the most, really interesting creative solutions to things that people who are much more linear thinkers don't go to. They don't even try because it doesn't make sense to them initially. So what one of the things in there is religion. Not as a problem, although, you certainly could put it in the problem pile. It's presented as a resource in the game. And so one of the things that Jacob was sort of said at one point was that he used religion and religion to solve fighting.
Religion and religion?
Yes. He said religion and religion. He had two religion cards. And he used them both to resolve fighting. And I said, that's interesting. And he said, well, it's kind of funny. I don't know if it would really work. And I said, well, explain. What do you mean? And he said, well, I use two religions to solve this fighting. He said, and I said, well, why? Why do you think that would work? He said, well, if one religion says that the fighting is not good, and then the other religion also says that the fighting is not good, then, maybe since they're both saying it, then they wouldn't fight. And I thought, well, I can see places where that would work, if you could actually get people to realize that, hey, my religion believes that killing people is wrong, and your religion believes that killing people is wrong, and can we see that both of those religions, agree that killing people is wrong, so why are we both killing each other over whether killing people is wrong or not? Because we both agree that it's wrong, right? So one of the things with the religion thing, though, is that it's been coming up sort of with this Christmas, it being Christmas and a lot of the kids talking about it a lot has been the issue of God and whether people believe in God. And one of my students got very upset at another student because she was, they were at a party, and I guess one of my students said that he didn't believe in God. And so one of my students, who was very religious, their family was very religious, got very angry at him and said that, she hates him, and later told his mom that she hates him because he believes in the devil. And she said, what do you mean? and she said, the child said, well, he said he doesn't believe in God, so that means he believes in the devil. And so we were talking about how, we need to have some discussion about this and resolution and, understanding of people's differences, because we're studying this whole thing with the game and resolving problems. And that's, in the game, that's prejudice. So I was thinking, how can we approach this? So I got the book Old Turtle. The book.
Right, I do know the book.
Right, and I sort of put it aside, in my and waited for, I need to read this, but when needs to happen at just the right moment. So I kind of had it ready, and this week, and I was thinking, I'm going to do this when it seems just right. So yesterday morning, we started singing the song that we're practicing for performance. And the song we're singing is called If You're Out There by John Legend. And it's a really awesome song that I suggested that the school sing, and I was really surprised that everybody wanted to do it, because I've always dreamed of doing this song with the school or using it in some way with the school, because it's just such an awesome song. It's one of the ones I posted.
Yes.
So, Yeah, so you know, it has these lines in it, you know, about, you know, no more broken promises, no more call to war, unless it's love and peace that we're really fighting for.
Yes,
you know,
and yes.
We can destroy hunger, we can conquer hate. So I was writing all the words on the whiteboard and then drawing pictures of all the things that it's saying, so the kids who are not really readers yet can understand what we're singing about. And we had this lot of discussion about each part of it, and they were sort of confused about a few things. But we got to the point of we can conquer hate, and I asked Max, okay, Max, what do you think this line is about? And he said, well, it's like when people, if some people believe in God and other people maybe don't believe in, you know, feel like they don't believe in God, and then they say they hate them because of that, and they're angry about it, and you know, but we can, like, we could, you know, that's saying that we can conquer that, like we could stop that. And I said, yeah, we have prejudice, you know, in our own classroom, because, you know, that happens in our own classroom. And how are we going to solve all these problems in the world if we can't solve them right here in our own room? You know, we might come up with some great ideas, but if we have ideas that are not so good, and we keep doing things that are not really, you know, good for everyone, then we try to go and help other people, then we're just actually doing things that aren't really helpful. We're just spreading around that prejudice. So how can we resolve that? And I said, I have this book to read, and I'll be reading it, but first let's sing the song. So we started singing the song. And they didn't want, I was saying it one time, they're like, oh, we want to do it again, we'll sing it again. So we sang it again, and then they're like, oh, we want to do it another time, we'll sing it again. So I sang it a third time, and as I'm singing it the third time, we get towards the end, and I'm looking down at the lyric sheet, and I notice that kids are starting to stand up in my peripheral vision. And I realize I've just sung the line where it's saying, like, really at the end, there's a lot of, you know, pathos in it, it's saying, you know, stand up and say it loud if you're out there, you know,
and
like.
And they stood up.
And they stood up. You know, they all started standing up. And so by the end, it was like they were all standing. Uh-huh. And it was totally spontaneous because I kept looking down. I didn't want to, like, encourage them or anything. I just wanted to see what they would do.
Yeah.
So they were all standing up at the end, and I was like, that was really cool. So afterwards, I said, okay, so now I'm going to read this book. And I want you to think about the prejudice in our classroom and see if this helps us to figure out a solution to it. So we read Old Turtle, and a lot of people got upset. You know, the usual people who are pretty religious, because it says God is this and God is that, and God's not that. And they were really, like, you know, defensive. And then when, of course, it says God, you know, she is a tree. God's not a she. And they were really, like, upset about that, too. I said, you need to, like, be quiet and continue to listen to the story. And so they kind of got through it. And, you know, by the end, they were, you know, much quieter and really thoughtful about it. And where I was saying, you know, well, what did you think of it? And they were saying, well, that's like the song, you know, we're like about people who they were fighting because they thought they couldn't agree on this. So I had this great discussion with them about belief, and that people have different beliefs, and that they have a right to their belief, and that if they want to believe in God, that that's their choice, and no one can bother them about that. And if they don't want to believe in God, that's their choice, and nobody can bother them about that. And I said, so I like spicy peppers. I said, you know, who likes spicy peppers? And, like, almost nobody raises their hand, right? And I said, no, I really like them, though. You know, and that's okay. I can like spicy peppers if I want to. Now, but I don't get to. Do I get to be mad at all of you guys because you don't like them? And they're like, oh, you can't do that. That wouldn't be fair. I said, do I get to make you eat them? They're like, no, you can't do that. I said, yeah, so that's, you know, that wouldn't be fair. And now, you guys like spicy, you don't like spicy peppers, and that's okay. I'm not going to be mad at you because you don't like my spicy peppers. I'm going to be okay with that because people have different opinions. So I brought that up at the all-school meeting, too. Mm-hmm. And everybody was pretty right on about it. I mean, I did the lesson of the whole spicy peppers thing with them too, and people were pretty cool with it. But, you know, there's been this arguments about Santa, and is Santa real, and, you know, the whole talk about that.
And nobody was silly or.
No, it was pretty good. We were pretty solid. But it was one of those, like, lessons where you're like, oh man, I just covered this last hour has been so packed with really intense stuff, and where you really feel like the kids are all like. totally, completely, fully engaged, because what you're talking about has deep meaning for them.
Right.
And those moments are rare, you know, when you really feel like you've really got them.
Right.
And you have to be careful about everything you say.
Right. Well, I'm gonna hang up now, and I thank you for that story.
You're welcome.
I had so much fun bringing you this podcast tonight, and I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed sharing it with you. I thank Save the Children and Christopher Melville for their work and for their time. Contact information for Christopher is Christopher Puma, all one word, ChristopherPuma, at Fanwar, FANWAR.com. Our next Education Now radio podcast will be on January 6th, when we share an interview with Katie Farber, talking to us about her new book, Change the World with Service Learning, How to Organize, Lead, and Assess Service Learning Projects. Katie was our guest on Education Now in August when we discussed her book, Why Great Teachers Quit, and I'm just delighted to have her back. Until then, I wish you all happy holidays, however you choose to celebrate the wonder of winter. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education, a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Education Now podcasts are listed on the American Montessori Society website at www.amshq.org under Regional Group Events. All broadcasts can be listened to with free download at this website. This is Athena Melville saying good night and sending best wishes to you all.
You are on the road, must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.